Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. We hope you all survived the wild weather, which hit hard across East County. Today, you'll hear updates and eyewitness accounts of the damage as the remnants of Hurricane Odile walloped our region. Park Station is back. Find out when the controversial proposed high-rise project in La Mesa will be on the Planning Commission's agenda without the backing of the original co-applicant. The California Public Utilities Commission is accused of allowing undue influence by a utility company that it's supposed to regulate. Find out details on the latest scandal to plague the state agency later in our show. The scandal breaks just as the Public Utilities Commission prepares to hold local hearings Thursday on proposed utility rate hikes. Hear why the Sierra Club is now accusing a local chamber of commerce of deceiving its members about who those rate hikes will harm and what you should know before Thursday's hearings in El Cajon. We'll also have details on two hikers rescued this week from a local trail, as well as a juicy story about an annual holiday tradition cooked up by Mama's Pies, a nonprofit that helps brighten the holiday season for local people in need. Leon Thompson attended the Santee City Council Candidates Forum held at a mobile home park recently, and he'll have details on some clear contrasts for voters in this race. On our health report, find out why a popular toothpaste brand is causing concern among dental professionals. You won't believe what's in it. Also hear about an upcoming forum for Lakeside voters to meet candidates on their ballot. Plus, we'll tell you about two world records broken last Friday at the Viejas Hotel in Alpine. And on Destination East County, we'll tell you about the hottest events coming up this week. Plus, in our arts and music segment, theater reviewer and writer David Codden will interview a representative from the Moxie Theater on its women-oriented dramatic works and upcoming 10th anniversary season. Plus, on our green scene segment, get details on plans to hold the world's largest climate march, including one right here in San Diego, to draw attention to the need for climate action. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. This is Miriam Raftery with an update on a powerful storm that lashed East County early Tuesday afternoon, causing major damage before moving across San Diego later in the day. Thousands of homes were left without power from at least 16 different outages in East County alone, SDG&E reported. Hardest-hit areas included Rancho San Diego, Mount Helix, and Spring Valley. Helix Water Board member Kathleen Hedberg captured dramatic images of the storm cell swooping toward her La Mesa home, a downdraft from a thunderstorm that looked more like tornadoes seen in the Midwest than a typical Southern California storm. Gusts of at least 50 miles an hour were reported, with coin-sized hailstones and sheets of rain pouring down. It was all a result of Hurricane Odile, which struck the Baja coast at 125 miles an hour, still clearly packing a wallop by the time it reached our region. The storm downed trees across our area, including one that struck a school bus and others uprooted at a shopping mall in Rancho San Diego. Fortunately, none of those incidents resulted in injuries. Now, I was driving on Mount Helix when I was caught in the midst of this deluge. On Fuerte, tree branches and palm fronds were hurled into the air, whirling around my car. A large tree branch also crashed down, narrowly missing my vehicle. Moments later on Grandview, a wall of water came pouring down from the sky, so much that it obscured visibility to absolute zero, forcing me to pull over as water rushed past, momentarily flooding the roadway as a storm drain overflowed. I arrived home to find patio umbrellas toppled and tiki torches that had gone airborne, trash cans and pottery planters had tipped over and broken, and a wooden fence at our home sustained significant damage. Connie Lind, another Mount Helix resident who lives on Tamiko Court, sent a photo of a 10-foot ladder that the wind blew into her pool. She wrote in an email to East County Magazine, "Our neighbor's 9-foot lawn umbrella took off, flew over the house, and left the neighborhood. Our neighbors later found their umbrella in the top of a tree." In addition, Lynn said, a tree fell in front of my husband's van when he drove over to Murdoch Elementary to pick up our granddaughter. Our reporter, Leon Thompson, saw a branch crash down next to his vehicle, too, dodging an obstacle course of debris as he drove through an unincorporated neighborhood on Mount Helix. A caller to Kogo Radio reported seeing lightning strike a tree on El Cajon Boulevard. Shannon O'Dunn said the temperature spiked to 106 degrees at her La Mesa home near Harry Griffith Park, where she heard thunder and had gusts of winds she estimates at 40 miles an hour that knocked over big planters at her residence. Our Bookshelf Radio Show host, Raina Menashe, reports, "I have a tree on my house and my power is out." Rebecca Williamson, co-host of our Destination East County segment on our radio show, was in El Cajon when the storm struck there. She reports, "We were seeing trees bent over and just sheets of rain, literally. It felt like we were in the Wizard of Oz. It was so out of the ordinary that people were joking, 'When do the houses and cows start flying by?'" And yet in some communities, the weather remained clear and calm. Ginny Burnite says she only saw a handful of raindrops at her home in Crest. "Although my friends in Rancho San Diego were singing in the rain," she reflects, "Crest residents had 105-degree heat with only pretty white clouds and blue sky."
The last hearing on a proposed high-rise development in La Mesa ended in a shocker when an American Legion spokesman announced his organization was withdrawing its support as a co-applicant of the controversial Park Station at the Crossroads of La Mesa project. The project would be situated on a former auto dealership site at the intersection of University Avenue and Baltimore Drive, also bordered by Spring Street and Nebo Drive. Now Park Station's backers have submitted a revised plan without the American Legion as a co-applicant. The revised plan has scaled down the total number of residential units from 416 to 363, or alternatively would build a hotel with up to 250 rooms plus 113 residential units. At the last hearing, the vast majority of La Mesa residents who live in La Mesa voiced opposition to the 11-story high-rise project, voicing concerns over community. Those who spoke in favor were nearly all from outside the community. Supporters say the project will create needed housing and jobs. The height would require a variance from the area's current 4-story limit for buildings in the vicinity of the historic downtown village. La Mesa's Planning Commission will hold a public hearing on the revised plan on Wednesday, October 1st in the City Council Chambers at 8130 Allison Avenue in La Mesa. The hearing starts at 7 p.m. with doors open at 6:30. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
Thousands of emails released this week reveal unethical back-channel communications between PG&E and the California Public Utilities Commission, the agency that is supposed to regulate public utilities. The emails revealed that PG&E was calling the shots as the public agency investigated PG&E's mistake leading up to the San Bruno gas pipeline explosion, which killed 8 people and destroyed 38 homes. Now Courage Campaign, a nonprofit public interest citizens group, calls the situation an outrage. The group has launched a petition drive to demand accountability and call for replacement of the entire CPUC leadership, as well as a full investigation into commissioners' actions. Thus far, only a staffer has been let go, but Chairman Michael Peavy, a former PG&E executive, remains at the helm. The Utility Reform Network, or TURN, had this to say. PG&E had a personal shopper in Peavy's office, helping to pick and choose the judges that suited PG&E best. A PG&E staffer actually wrote a letter to a top federal safety official that CPUC President Peavy signed. Other emails show that a gas safety conference organized by the CPUC on behalf of the state of California was in fact a front for PG&E to push its agenda, Courage Campaign says. The relationship has become so cozy that in July, one PG&E executive actually told officials at the CPUC, the so-called regulatory agency, "I love you." Peavy has had inappropriately close ties with other utilities. He's been wined and dined on two continents by SDG&E and Sempra, as we have previously reported on East County Magazine. Plus, during a CPUC hearing at which former City Attorney Michael Aguirre spoke as an advocate for ratepayers and asked Peavy if he held secret meetings with Southern California Edison over the San Onofre settlement, Peavy became the peeve. He shouted at Aguirre to shut up in the middle of the public hearing. This is Miriam Raftery with some important information about two public hearings on proposed utility rate changes that are being pushed forward by SDG&E and the utility industry. The California Public Utilities Commission, or CPUC, will be holding two hearings on this proposal this Thursday, September 18th, in the El Cajon City Council Chambers at 2 o'clock and again at 6:30 p.m. The public is invited to attend, and you can testify. Sierra Club's San Diego chapter is warning consumers about what it calls deceptive claims made by the San Diego East County Chamber of Commerce regarding proposed changes in the utility bills, including links in a chamber email that went back to a utility-backed website that has been debunked by multiple media sites for its efforts to dupe the public into supporting anti-consumer measures. The chamber has sought to persuade its members to testify in favor of the proposed utility rate changes, suggesting they would save money for most people and businesses. But the changes would actually raise energy costs for low- and middle-income customers, those who can least afford to pay more on their energy bills, warns Pete Hassapopoulos with the Sierra Club's My Generation campaign. In addition, he says, the proposed changes by utilities are unacceptable and threaten our energy efficiency and rooftop solar programs. As a result, they are deeply out of line with state and public priorities on energy and climate, says the Sierra Club's representative. In an email to chamber members, General Manager Eric Lund said the current four-tier rate system has created severe unfairness to East County ratepayers and that those in the middle tiers are paying higher rates, subsidizing ratepayers who live along the coastal region and don't need air conditioning. The chamber urged members to support the two-tier system, and it referred its members to fixmyenergybill.com for more information. But Hassapopoulos, in an email sent to East County Magazine, attached a four-page fact sheet that includes a point-by-point debunking of the chamber's claims. Moreover, he states, the Foundation for Independent Voter Research Issues Committee, PAC, is behind Fix My Energy, which was a tool of Sempra SDG&E. The group promoted an anti-consumer bill, AB 327, last fall, the Sierra Club spokesman mentions. After the group posted comments on UT San Diego articles seeking to dupe consumers on the newspaper site, UT reporter Morgan Lee revealed Fix My Energy Bill site's hidden backing by big utility corporations. Supervisor Diane Jacob joined Sierra Club at a press conference in front of Sempra's headquarters last year, speaking out against this deceptive website. So why is the chamber supporting it? The Independent Voter PAC is run by David Takashima, a former utility executive, the Reader reported. It also has ties to former legislator Steve Peace, known for throwing lavish parties in Maui each year for legislators and promoting utility causes. The legislature passed the Anti-Consumer Energy Bill AB 327 last year. It allows the California Public Utilities Commission to change how utilities charge consumers for electricity. The changes proposed by the utilities have been largely opposed by consumer and environmental groups, as well as by clean energy companies. Opponents say these changes would lead to more revenue for the utilities, more dirty power plants, and less local clean energy. So what does the proposed utility rate change actually do? California currently has four tiers for utility rates, with Tier 1 the lowest rates and Tier 4 the highest. Everybody gets a baseline amount of electricity at the lowest tier rates, and those in hotter climates are already allocated more. Thus, Hassapopoulos says the chamber's claim that the rate changes are needed to provide lower rates to those in swelteringly hot places such as East County is simply not true. Customers who use more than their baseline amounts are then charged more. The utility-backed proposal for rate changes would do two things. It would add a monthly fixed charge of $10 to every customer's bill, except $5 for low-income customers on care rates. This would provide up to $38 billion in revenues for utility companies over 25 years. The plan would also reduce the number of tiers to just two and have only a small difference in the rates charged. Tier 1 rates on the lowest energy users and low-income consumers would go up, discouraging conservation and having negative impacts on those who cannot afford to pay more. There would also be a significantly smaller difference in rates between the top and bottom tiers, providing no real incentive for people to conserve energy. Business groups pushing the plan forward have major financial ties to the utility industry. SDG&E, for example, regularly sponsors East County Chamber events. They're a major donor to the chamber, and the chamber has an SDG&E representative on its board. The Sierra Club's fact sheet warns that consumers should be wary of the utility-backed rate change proposal. The fact sheet concludes, utilities claiming they care about their customers is like Colonel Sanders claiming he cares about chickens. It doesn't add up. The environmental group adds, utilities have shown time and time again that they have little regard for their customers. Look no further than the San Bruno crisis or the mishandling of the San Onofre boondoggle to see examples of the utilities putting profit ahead of their customers.
With temperatures hitting triple-digit heat, San Diego Fire Rescue Department rescued two hikers by helicopter Saturday on Cowles Mountain. Rescuers were dispatched to aid a 12-year-old girl who had injured her ankle, 10 News reports. While still in the vicinity, the helicopter crew responded to a second call for help, performing a hoist rescue of an 80-year-old woman with heat-related medical problems. Both victims were taken to a hospital for treatment. The National Weather Service advises against strenuous physical activity in such extreme heat. If you must be outdoors, stay hydrated by making sure to carry plenty of water with you and always carry a cell phone in case of illness or injury. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barrena.
Top pastry chefs, caterers, restaurants, and bakeries across San Diego County are cooking up pies to donate for the annual Mama's Pie in the Sky Thanksgiving Bake Sale. The fundraiser, now in its 10th year, benefits Mama's Kitchen, a nonprofit organization that provides free nutritional support to San Diego area residents who are affected by AIDS or cancer and who are vulnerable to hunger. Sales begin October 6th and continue through November 23rd. All proceeds from pie sales go directly into funding thousands of free, hot, and nutritious Mama's Kitchen meals, which help ensure that no one living with AIDS or cancer will go hungry in the San Diego community. So far, 13 bakers from across the county have signed up to participate, but more are needed to meet Mama's Kitchen's goal of delivering more than 5,000 pies during the 6-week bake sale, which is being promoted by pie sellers on their social media sites, all for a good cause to help hungry San Diegans. Volunteers will deliver the pies to 20 locations across the county for pickup on Wednesday, November 26th, just in time for those Thanksgiving Day feasts. You can order pies in flavors including pumpkin, apple, Dutch apple, and pecan online at mamaspies.org or by calling 619-233-6262 and help give people in need across our region something to be thankful for, too. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. Top pastry chefs, caterers, restaurants, and bakeries across San Diego County are cooking up pies to donate for the annual Mama's Pie in the Sky Thanksgiving Bake Sale. The fundraiser, now in its 10th year, benefits Mama's Kitchen, a nonprofit organization that provides free nutritional support to San Diego area residents who are affected by AIDS or cancer and who are vulnerable to hunger. Sales begin October 6th and continue through November 23rd. All proceeds from pie sales go directly into funding thousands of free, hot, and nutritious Mama's Kitchen meals, which help ensure that no one living with AIDS or cancer will go hungry in the San Diego community. So far, 13 bakers from across the county have signed up to participate, but more are needed to meet Mama's Kitchen's goal of delivering more than 5,000 pies during the 6-week bake sale, which is being promoted by pie sellers on their social media sites, all for a good cause to help hungry San Diegans. Volunteers will deliver the pies to 20 locations across the county for pickup on Wednesday, November 26th, just in time for those Thanksgiving Day feasts. You can order pies in flavors including pumpkin, apple, Dutch apple, and pecan online at mamaspies.org or by calling 619-233-6262 and help give people in need across our region something to be thankful for, too. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson with a report from the campaign trail in Santee. Santee City Council candidates spoke at the Santee Mobile Homeowners Association on Saturday, drawing sharp distinctions between the incumbents on a council with strong representation for business and development interests versus challengers who seek to represent ordinary citizens, smart growth, and the younger generation in Santee. Santee City Council candidates spoke at the Santee Mobile Homeowners Association on Saturday, drawing sharp distinctions between the incumbents on a council with strong representation for business and development interests versus challengers who seek to represent ordinary citizens, smart growth, and the younger generation in Santee. Mobile homeowners make up more than 10% of registered Santee voters, and they turn out to vote in huge percentages. Mobile homeowners tend to be engaged and well-informed, leading to some very pointed questions. Many in the audience were understandably concerned over rent control. As one mobile homeowner remarked, "Unlike apartment dwellers, we can't just pick up our mobile homes and move." After a 17-year battle, the city of Santee will preserve rent control protections with a 20-year agreement that will insure against any further lawsuits. Councilman Rob McNellis said that the city spent over $2.4 million, that's $2.4 million, over 17 years over rent control. He added, at least we won't have to worry about it for the next 20 years. But Maggie Acera, one of the challengers, said that the city has to take a proactive position and keep pushing on rent control to protect more people. She noted only 51% of mobile homes in Santee are covered, and a lot more needs to be done. Two incumbents and three challengers are running for three seats on the council. Councilmember John Ryan will not be running for re-election, leaving one seat open. John Minto is the best-known candidate, having served on the council for 12 years. He is a former San Diego detective, and he is proud of the work the council has done and pointed to the balanced budget, new development, and the safety of the community as part of his accomplishments. Minto is chairman of the Santee Economic Development Council, yet he showed independence in voting against the wakeboard and cable ski park project at Santee Lakes that was favored by the other pro-growth members of the council. He joined the rest of the council in voting for a resolution opposing the Quail Brush power plant proposed for Mission Trails Regional Park, calling it a public nuisance. Critics say that the council moves forward on many matters, such matters, with little concern for public opinion. When confronted, Minto said, "Our job is to fill the potholes and keep the public safe." When questioned on the city's treatment of the homeless, he showed little compassion for their plight. Minto said, "Let them move to El Cajon or Lakeside. I don't care, just as long as they aren't in Santee. We used to have laws to prevent this," he added. Rob McNellis is the other incumbent. He was first elected in 2010. McNellis is the owner of One Stop Lending and Realty in Santee. In 2013, he was selected as vice mayor of Santee. McNellis favors new development and replacing the old with the new. He is a strong advocate for the Finita Ranch housing project. He was vocal in expressing his disdain for the transient population. He said, "You can tell who they are because all their belongings are in the shopping cart. They won't accept help because they would have to remain clean and sober." UT San Diego's reported that McNellis grew so fed up with shopping carts used by the homeless following the landscape that he proposed a law that would require retailers to track their carts. Among the three challengers, Ron Hall is backed by pro-business and development forces that have supported the city council majority. Hall is endorsed by conservatives from Congressman Duncan Hunter to Grossmont Union High School District's Jim Kelly. Hall was introduced to the Santee Mobile Homeowners Association members at their August meeting by none other than Mayor Randy Vopel. Hall is a familiar face in business circles in Santee. He is the past president of the Santee Chamber of Commerce and an active member of the chamber for 10 years. He has an insurance business and his wife is a realtor. He helped establish the Santee Street Fair and is a member of Shadow Mountain Community Church congregation in El Cajon. He says that building a sense of community, having a positive attitude, genuine concerns for others, and a hard-working character are qualities he brings to the council and to the city. Maggie Acera is a crusader for democracy and aims to be an advocate for the people. She is a budget specialist in financial and budget management. According to her website, she believes in sound fiscal management of the city. She states, "Balancing business growth with quality of life issues is a challenge for the city moving forward. The current council has compromised our town with big business development without regard to those who live here," Acera contends. While the current council succeeded in attracting big business by cutting fees, regulations, and taxes, the taxpayers of Santee pick up the slack, Acera told the homeowners in the audience. One audience member commented, "It's not just potholes. Whole roads are cracked. We need sidewalks, curbs, gutters, and lighting." Acera said that without a dissenting vote on the city council, citizens' concerns cannot be adequately heard. She cited the council's handling of the Quail Brush power plant as evidence that citizens' concerns are not always heard. As Sarah said, remember, the information about the plant being built and final plans were already on their way to the San Diego Planning Commission with little public knowledge. Both Pinnacle Peak and the Omelet House were run out of business by rezoning to high-density multiple residency without input from the people impacted by the already congested roads and services, she added. As Sarah called for more transparency and accountability, she says she plans to have all council meetings videotaped and published on the City Hall website for citizen review. Last but not least, an impressive newcomer, Keshav Damore, answered questions with confidence backed by a command of the history and statistics of Santee. He made a compelling case for smart growth within Santee as the city reaches its maximum growth potential. 40% of Santee residents are between 15 and 45 years of age, he noted. We should encourage a variety of voices and views on the council. Damore grew up in Santee before Mass Street Bridge was built, back when Trolley Center was a vacant field. He told the audience, I've seen Santee grow, and I have a vision for the future where high-tech industries like biotech find a home in Santee with all its fine amenities. We must continue to treasure our natural spaces and take good care of our elder population. 32-year-old Keshav Damore is the former director of the Santee Food Bank, chairman of the Salary Setting Advisory Committee, and commissioner of the Mobile Home Fair Practices Commission. He says he works well with the current council and sees himself as the transition candidate as the mantle of responsibility is passed to the next generation of happy Santee residents.
This is Ed Barreno with the Health Report. A dental hygienist who noticed blue specks embedded in her patient's gums found that all these patients had one thing in common. They were using Crest toothpaste. It turns out that the toothpastes contain plastic microbeads, and now the hygienist, Trish Walraven, has launched an effort to get the plastic removed, 10 News reports. Her blog drew national attention, and now Procter & Gamble, the maker of Crest toothpaste, has said that it does offer some products without the ingredient, called polyethylene, on the labels, and the company will remove the plastic beads from all of its products by March 2016. Plastic microbeads aren't only in toothpaste. They are also in many skincare products, such as facial and body care scrubs. But some consumer advocates say that national legislation is needed to get plastics out of all personal care products.
Residents of Lakeside are invited to meet candidates for public office on October 9th from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. This nonpartisan event is open to all candidates running to represent Lakeside, including school boards, fire boards, planning boards, water boards, and higher offices, as well as local ballot initiative campaigns. The forum will be held at the Lakeside Rodeo Grounds at 12584 Mapleview Street and is sponsored by the Lakeside Chamber of Commerce. For more information, you can visit lakesideca.com. This has been Leon Thompson with the Lakeside Report on East County Magazine.
If the sky looks bright over East County last Friday, here's why. Viejas was holding a VIP party that evening for their 23rd anniversary. 299 people gathered around the pool at Viejas Hotel and handed off sparkler flames from one person to another, setting a Guinness World Record for longest sparkler relay. The final sparkler lit a fuse that set off a spectacular chain of over 10,000 fireworks, setting another new Guinness World Record for longest chain of fireworks. Official adjudicator Alex Engert from Guinness World Records was on hand to witness and certify both new Guinness World Records. He then presented Tribal Chairman Anthony Arpico with the official certificates. Viejas General Manager Chris Kelly said the celebration was about more than just a new listing in the World Records book. He said the records reflect 23 years of teamwork. He thanked guests and employees for joining in the anniversary festivities and added that he looks forward to sharing more success in the years ahead. Reporting for East County Magazine's Tribal Beat on KNSJ, this is Ed Barreno.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
An infestation of gold-spotted oak borers that has already killed thousands of oak trees across East County is now taking a heavy toll in Ramona. The Ramona Sentinel reports that the insects have killed large oaks at the San Vicente Golf Course, at Dos Picos Park along Mussy Grade Road, and an oak in the right-of-way on Archie Moore Road. The Beatles first made its way to San Diego in 2004, most likely hitching a ride on a load of firewood from Arizona, according to a website devoted to the Beatle, gsob.org. The Beatle has its own dedicated website, gsob.org, through the University of California Cooperative Extension. The infestation is fatal once it strikes, killing mature oak trees within just a few weeks. All local oak species have been stricken, except the Engelmann oaks appear resistant and have not been infested. Symptoms of an infestation include D-shaped holes in the tree trunk, red or black staining that can be as small as a coin or as large as a half foot across, blistering and oozing from the tree's surface, crown thinning, dead branches, and leaf loss before the normal season loss of leaves. Infected trees should be reported to the county. To help prevent the spread of this disease, residents are asked to remove firewood from an infested area. If an infested tree is cut, the trunk, stump, and branches should be stored beneath black plastic sheets on site for at least a year to kill the beetles. After a year, the wood can be burned as firewood locally. It's Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County has some hot musical and theater events, also marking the start of Hispanic Heritage Month celebrations. Plus, we'll have previews of coming attractions from a fiesta in Spring Valley to the Viejas Days Parade.
We'll have all these events and more, so stay tuned for another edition of East County Magazine's Destination East County.
On Friday night, September 19th, Sirens Crush Dance Band will perform at Downtown El Cajon's Dinner and a Concert. The event runs from 6 to 8 p.m. in Prescott Promenade in El Cajon.
Lemon Grove Historical Society and the Lemon Grove Oral History Project will celebrate local Hispanic heritage on September 20th from 1 until 4 p.m. in the Rosemary Putman Community Room of the Lemon Grove Library. The festive event will feature music, food, photo displays, presentations by a local artist and author, the videotaped reminiscence of Lemon Grove's pioneer Hispanic families, and more. This event is free and open to the public.
The Moxie Theater is launching its 10th anniversary season with the opening night, September 20th, featuring Liz Duffy Adams, A Discourse on the Wonders of the Invisible World. Adams' Dog Act was the very first Moxie Theater show back in 2005, 5 years before the company had even moved to its current Rolando Performance Space just west of La Mesa. For details and tickets, visit moxietheater.org.
You're invited to the 2014 Kids Care Fest, a free, family-oriented event featuring free health care screenings. This year's Kids Care Fest will be held on Saturday, September 20th at Briarcrest Park, 9001 Wakarusa Street, La Mesa. The event runs from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Kids Care Fest is presented by the Grossmont Healthcare District, La Mesa Park and Recreation Foundation in the city of La Mesa. Organizers expect more than 1,000 children will receive free, potentially life-saving health care screenings, including hearing, vision, and dental screenings. Free medical information will be available from doctors and pharmacists, plus the kids' free fingerprinting. You can also enjoy more free activities, including water safety, inflatable jumps and pony rides, demonstrations and displays from law enforcement and fire departments. For more information, visit kidscarefest.org.
A cultural celebration featuring music, dance, and cuisine of San Diego's Somali Bantu community will be held on Saturday, September 20th, from 2 to 5 p.m. at the United Domestic Workers of America office, 4855 Seminole Drive, San Diego. All proceeds benefit the Somali Bantu Association of America's programs impacting refugees in our community. For information or tickets, contact 619-206-4000 or visit sbaoa.org.
For the 45th year, Julian celebrates the end of summer with music. The Julian Music Festival will be held at the Mangini Winery on September 20th from 1 until 8 p.m. This year's event features bluegrass to celebrate the festival's roots, Western ballads to remember the past, as well as music by current songwriters and singers. Performers range from cool band Luke performing high-energy favors to Trails and Rails offering train songs, cowboy tunes, pop, swing, vocal harmonies, and whistling. For tickets and more information, visit julianmusicfestival.com.
Hot cars and spicy chili are all part of the Alpine Kiwanis 2014 annual car show and chili cook-off event, which also features a pancake breakfast. If you revved up for the activities on Saturday, September 20th from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m., you can visit the Alpine Community Center located at 1830 Alpine Boulevard in Alpine. If you're revved up for the festivities on Saturday, September 20th from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m., you can visit the Alpine Community Center located at 1830 Alpine Boulevard in Alpine.
Music from the Middle East, a classical string quartet, contemporary tunes from Argentina, a pop, rock, and soul ensemble are among the performances set for Cuyamaca College's fall concert series that begins September 18th. The fall season gets underway with an Indonesian ensemble performing traditional music from West Java on bronze percussion instruments. A full list of performances and low-cost ticket details can be found at cuyamaca.edu/performingarts.
And now for a preview of coming attractions. Quilt trails highlight the unique culture of communities with displays of historical quilting art forms, encouraging tourism. Over 130 quilt trails exist across the U.S., and soon the Julian Backcountry Quilt Trail will become the first in Southern California. A ribbon-cutting ceremony for the opening of the Julian Backcountry Quilt Trail is planned for Thursday, September 25th at the Winola Pizza and Bistro in Julian. The trail will eventually extend for 30 miles in all directions, displaying historic quilt squares across rural East County.
Spring Valley will host its celebration of Hispanic Heritage Month on September 27th with the 9th annual Spring Valley Fiesta. The event is free and features entertainment, refreshments, inflatable children's jumper, video game truck, face painting, and community information booths. The lineup of entertainers includes Danza Azteca, Ballet Folklorica, La Prensa Middle School Jazz Band, DJ Lowrider Cars, and much, much more. The fiesta will be held at the Spring Valley Library.
September 28th is Viejas Days in Alpine, complete with a parade. The parade rolls out at 2 p.m. down Alpine Boulevard to the Alpine Creek Town Center, complete with floats, bands, and plenty of family fun.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County show on KNSJ, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Arts and Music Spotlight. I'm your host, David Cotty. My guest today is Jennifer Eve Thorne, Associate Artistic Director of Moxie Theater. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hi.
Jennifer, what is your definition of Moxie, and how does it tie into the theater's artistic mission?
Moxie is a great word that you don't hear used as often as it used to be, but I'm hoping it's coming back into fashion, and it means to have courage, grit, or gumption. Grit and gumption are also words you don't hear very often anymore, but the word really describes our company well and the type of work that we like to do.
Tell me a little bit about the founding of the company.
Moxie Theater was founded in 2004 by myself and three other theater artists in San Diego, Joanne Glover, Liv Kellgren, and Delicia Turner Sonnenberg.
Now, in 10 years, that's a long time. How has the company evolved over that 10 years?
Well, the company has grown in terms of size. There was originally four of us, and gosh, now I think we're at 10 or 11 on staff, and so that's been exciting. And we have increased our subscription base and our audiences, and we now have a permanent home, which we didn't have when we started.
That's right. The first 5 years, you were kind of nomadic. How did you happen to get that permanent home that you wanted so badly?
Well, you know, it was a choice initially to begin producing without a home. It was important to us to be able to stay tied to the type of work that we wanted to do without worrying about rent every year. And so by producing at established theater companies around the city, doing a season there, that allowed us to do that. And then just about the beginning of our fifth season, we talked to another fabulous San Diego theater company, Signet Theater, who was ready to move out of their space, and they wanted to make sure that the space was handed over to another company who they believed in and who they supported. And so they let us know, and that's how we found the space we're in now.
Signet, of course, moved to Old Town. For our readers who don't know where Moxie is, tell us.
We are on El Cajon Boulevard in the Rolando area, right near San Diego State, on the border of La Mesa.
And there is a pizza place in the strip mall.
Yeah, that comes in handy after late night rehearsals.
Okay. So what special insights? This goes with the mission of Moxie. What special insights, Jennifer, do you believe that women playwrights bring to contemporary theater?
Our mission at Moxie is to create more diverse and honest images of women for our culture. And the way that we focus on doing that, one of the primary ways, is through the production of mostly female playwrights. We've done that for a reason. One reason is because the national average shows that only 16% of all plays getting professionally produced are written by female playwrights. But also because we felt like in order to create more diverse images of women for our culture, we had to be telling the stories that were coming from women. And so even though we focus on producing work that sort of defies stereotypes about women, for example, one of the shows this season is Enron, which is based on the collapse of Enron and the financial crisis, which certainly is not what people think women are writing about. But that's the point of, I think, why Moxie exists. We want you to think differently about women's work and what women, what female artists are interested in exploring and writing about.
Do you, through your community outreach, your education outreach, find a way to encourage young girls to be involved and be interested in theater?
I'm glad that you asked that, because these last few years, the growth of our education program has been one of the most exciting developments at Moxie for me. The School of Moxie teaches artists, both male and female, professionals and beginners. But one of the really incredible things that's begun to happen is young female artists, or just young women who are exploring who they are and what they want to do in the world, are finding their way to Moxie and are taking our classes and then signing on to be interns. They work on our productions. They work on things in the administrative office. And we think that those young women, we've got several of them interning with us right now, those are the future of Moxie.
Speaking of the future, your big night is September 20th, opening night of the 10th season. Tell us what we're going to see.
You're going to see a really great new play called A Discourse on the Wonders of the Invisible World by Liz Duffy Adams, who is one of Moxie's favorite playwrights. And we're really excited to share this new play with San Diego.
And Liz Duffy Adams has kind of a connective history with Moxie.
She does. That the first play that Moxie ever produced was also by Liz Duffy Adams, and that was titled Dog Act, and it actually developed sort of a cult following. We had people, we added performances at midnight. We had full audiences lining up to see, you know, a midnight show of a first play of a brand new theater company. And part of, I think, why we've been successful is producing playwrights like Liz, who are really on the forefront of American theater and writing really new, exciting work. So we decided she was the first playwright we produced 10 years ago. So why not celebrate by producing her newest play for our 10th anniversary?
Let's go even further into the future. 10 years from now, where do you expect Moxie to be?
It's been our goal since we were founded to pass Moxie on. So while I think that I'll still be involved with Moxie in 10 years, I certainly hope that the next artistic director is in the wings, learning the ropes and ready to add her own artistic sensibility to the company. I think that Moxie should grow and exist in perpetuity, and that those leadership roles, the ones that myself and Delicia and Joanne have now, should be handed on. And I look forward to, you know, coming back and seeing productions and congratulating those artists on what they've done with Moxie.
Good luck with the new show and the new season, and thank you for visiting with us.
Thanks for having me.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to East County Magazine Show's Jobs Talk, bringing you news about great jobs, job training opportunities, and growing our regional economy.
If you're a part-time or full-time worker, you'll soon have at least 3 paid sick leave days a year starting in July 2015. Governor Jerry Brown has signed into law a bill authored by San Diego Assemblymember Lorena Gonzalez. The bill is expected to impact 6.5 million workers, 40% of the state's workforce that currently lacks paid time off when they're sick. Under the new law, workers will earn one paid sick day for every 30 hours they work. Assemblymember Gonzalez voiced gratitude to her Democratic colleagues for passing the bill, which was opposed by Republicans. As a single working mom, I know firsthand the challenge of having to juggle a sick child who needs to see a doctor and your responsibilities at work, she stated. But no parent should have to experience the heartache of having to choose between making the rent and taking care of their child. The measure was backed by labor groups and opposed by business interests. Supporters say the bill was necessary to protect the health of workers and others, since employees who come to work sick can infect co-workers and the public. Opponents argued the bill would cost employers money. But the website paidsickdays.org has published a fact sheet indicating that paid sick days actually reduce costs for employers by preventing other employees from becoming ill, while also reducing insurance and public health care costs. In San Francisco, many employers initially opposed a similar measure, but now 2/3 of San Francisco employers support the law, according to the Institute for Women's Policy Research. Governor Brown, in signing the bill into law, stated, "When you look at the power and the wealth that is accumulated by a very small percentage, and then you look at the people at the bottom, this is the least we can do, and there's more in the coming years." He called the bill a real step forward. Similar measures have been passed by several cities and by the state of Connecticut. At least 20 states now have paid sick leave measures introduced in their legislatures. The law exempts workers in a handful of industries, including airline flight crews under federal labor laws, employees under certain collective bargaining arrangements, and state-funded in-home health care providers, the Los Angeles Times reports. Employers are prohibited from retaliating against workers who request paid sick days and can face fines up to $4,000 a day if they refuse to pay a sick worker or otherwise violate the new law. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with a Green Scene Report. People around the world will be holding a climate march on September 21st to call on world leaders meeting at the United Nations Climate Summit to take action now on climate change. Organizers hope to make it the largest climate march in history. Here in San Diego, a People's Climate Change March will be held to support the global events and focus on climate change solutions that can be implemented locally. The marchers will be calling for a rapid transition from fossil fuels to renewables and energy efficiency, as well as a just and sustainable economy. Locally, the march will begin at 12:30 p.m. on September 21st at the City Hall, located at 202 C Street in downtown San Diego. The marchers will stop at the Santa Fe train station to highlight transportation alternatives and end up at the County Administration's Waterfront Park. There, local leaders will speak on developing sustainable policies and supporting green jobs and clean energy. Confirmed speakers include Todd Gloria, San Diego City Council President, and Richard Barrera with the San Diego Imperial County's Labor Councils. The organizers indicate there will also be music and fun activities. The coalition of over 25 environmental, health, and labor organizations endorsing the march includes San Diego 350, the Environmental Health Coalition, Sierra Club San Diego, the San Diego Imperial County's Labor Council, AFL-CIO, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 569, Citizens Climate Lobby, and California Nurses Association. Participants are asked to sign up at the group's website at peoplesclimatesd.org.
Voters will weigh an array of local ballot measures across San Diego County on a wide range of issues. In La Mesa and Encinitas, voters will be asked whether their cities should legalize and regulate medical marijuana dispensaries. La Mesa residents will also vote on whether to impose term limits for council members and the mayor, and whether to make the city clerk an appointed position instead of elected. Julian Cuimaca Fire District voters will be asked to approve a new benefit fee for emergency medical response and firefighting, since their district has opted to remain independent from the county fire authority. In Escondido, residents will vote on whether the city should become a charter city. National City wants its voters to increase sales tax by a penny for 20 years to fund police, firefighting, graffiti removal, senior and youth services, road repairs, and more. Chula Vista voters will cast ballots on whether to require competitive bidding on major contracts. Another Chula Vista initiative would end runoff elections to fill council vacancies if one candidate gets over 50% of the votes in the special election. In the Rincon Ranch area, voters will weigh in on whether to approve a tax for road repairs. Across the county, voters are weighing in on school bonds in several school districts. Cajon Valley Union School District wants a $20 million bond to increase student access to computers and improve technology. Lakeside Union School District seeks $31 million to modernize classrooms, build science labs, and increase student access to computers. The Lemon Grove School District is asking voters for $10 million to fix or replace leaking roofs, modernize facilities, build more classrooms, and increase students' access to computers. Ramona Unified School District wants $40 million for modernizing classrooms and restrooms, fixing or replacing roofs, electrical, and plumbing systems. The Escondido Union School District wants a whopping $182 million in bonds for repair or replacement of classrooms, improving security, and upgrading technology. The National School District is seeking $26.1 million to rebuild its aging classrooms and facilities, meet access requirements for the disabled, and upgrade heating and air conditioning as well as technology. The smallest school bond measure countywide, $2 million, is in the Vallecito School District, which asks voters to support improvements to educational facilities, health, safety, and technology. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. There won't be a gas-fired power plant built next to Mission Trails Regional Park after all. Plans for the controversial project have been withdrawn at the request of a letter sent by Quail Brush Genco LLC, the project applicant, to the California Energy Commission on September 12th. The project had faced overwhelming opposition, including city councils of both Santee and San Diego, the Santee School District, environmental groups, and residents. Preserve Wild Santee hailed the news as a victory, posting the following message on its Facebook page. The 100-megawatt plant that would have despoiled Mission Trails Park while burning fracked gas is history. Environmental groups that waged the successful battle to halt the fossil fuel-powered Quail Brush facility are now gearing up for a court battle in hopes of stopping a similar plant proposed in the Otay Mesa area. SDG&E has contended these facilities were needed to meet local power needs after the decommissioning of the San Onofre nuclear plant. But opponents contend this need can be met with clean energy solutions such as rooftop solar. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.